Welcome to Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna.
That is caught! Touchdown! Oh, my gosh! How did that happen? He got it from 59 yards away for the win!
Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna, is brought to you by Ticket Exchange, Community First Credit Union, Carrie Limousine, Wachovia, Sunny's Barbecue, and by Everbank. Jaguars This Week begins right now.
Good evening and welcome to Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna. I'm Jeff Loggam and Brian Sexton has the night off. So what we've done is we've upgraded the chair across the table from me to John Osher, the senior editor of Jaguars.com. Good evening, John.
Thank you for having me, Jeff. You know, I appreciate it.
At least you could do, as Sean was joking around and walking the building, he said, look, I'm wearing the same clothes that I saw you last week. And he's wearing the same exact workout.
See, it's radio. You're not supposed to say things like that, though.
Well, you know, at least you could do is put on a fresh set of clothes and not wear a set of clothes for a week. What, they didn't get the moving trucks to bring your clothes down from Indy?
I'm going to say, the sad thing is I haven't changed. And that's that's a really frightening thing.
Hey, you said we updated. Now, do we update from you or do we update from Sexton?
Upgraded from me.
Yeah. Right.
So
okay.
We got John right. Upgraded my chair over there, and we certainly have a downgrade here with me running the show for Brian. A lot to get into today. Collective bargaining, we'll touch on that. Rules changes, which I got some strong opinions about that. And I know, John, you wrote an article where you talked to the head coach about some rules changes. And then the draft, the Jaguars.com draft board continues to roll on, the mock draft that you guys are doing. But let's start with collective bargaining, because obviously that's still topic number one. There really is not a whole lot going on.
And you really get the feeling that it's all going to come down to April 6th, like we talked about, about last week. And it's going to kind of be in the hands of, if they rule that the lockout is valid, then it's valid, and it's going to be a matter of the players kind of coming back and saying, okay, what do we have to do to get it done? If they rule the lockout isn't valid, then you get the idea that they're just going to go on like it was when you were playing for a while, where it's in the courts.
Yeah, and that happened, I guess. The decertification was 89.
Right.
The collective bargaining agreement was agreed upon and instituted, I believe, in 93.
Right. And really, for 4 years, I followed the league as a fan. I was covering high schools and colleges. But you sort of knew every once in a while you'd see a story in the corner of the paper.
Yeah, all back page stuff, though.
But I don't know if you as a player knew about it, but...
Oh, yeah, we knew, but I mean... It didn't affect
the game.
No, it didn't affect the game, and it really didn't affect, I guess you could say, the livelihood of the players.
Right.
Because they were still able to function. The only thing that's really happened since last week is that since Roger Goodell sent a letter individually to every player in the National Football League, the executive committee for the Players Association responded with a letter of their own. And it wasn't so much a letter to the owners, each individual owner, as it was is just a response to Commissioner Roger Goodell's letter to all the players. And it really was kind of went line item by line item, point to point, arguing the, hey, the points that you made in your letter, saying how good of a deal it was. Here's our viewpoint of what you said. And I guess now it's somewhat of a public relations battle.
Yeah.
Or at least they're kind of trying to have a little bit of that in the public forum.
And I think they can do that all they want. I'm sure the listeners are doing the same thing that you and I are doing, sitting here talking about it, is, wake me up April 6th.
Yeah.
I know we can't do that because we have to talk about it a little
bit.
But you just get the idea. No public relations battle, nothing these guys say at this point is going to matter to the fans one bit. The fans don't care. They want to see football. And you can say all you want about who's right and who's wrong.
Let me ask you a question.
I don't think players care. I mean, I don't think the fans care.
Let me ask you this question because, I'm obviously reading up on this stuff. I mean, I won't say every day because, sometimes it's five times a day where you want to get the latest update. And, reading reports from – team, sales people, ticket people from around the league, seeing some of their quotes, talking to some of the people here in this building, stadium. Are the fans and or business community slow to jump back on board with season tickets and also maybe with sponsorships to maybe send their own message?
I'm not sure if it's sending the message as much as it is just sort of human nature of saying, you know what, until this thing gets decided, I'm just going to see what happens.
Yeah, and see, I get the feeling sometimes that maybe it's their own way of saying,
could be,
get it done.
Yeah.
You know, call me when it's all done.
I think that's the biggest thing. And I would imagine there are some players who kind of have the same approach of, you know what, I'm tired of talking about it. I'm tired of thinking about it. Call me when it's done. At some point, it's going to get done. And I think you really can't tell a whole lot about anything right now until something is decided in the courts. And at that point, you're going to see sort of how the story plays out. It really feels like you're in limbo.
Yeah,
I haven't thought about it that much since last week because it's like, okay, let's focus on the draft. Let's focus on and I see what's going on. And I just think once April 6th rolls around, you're going to get a lot better reaction on sort of where we're going to go from here.
Yeah, and I don't know how that's going to go.
I don't think
anybody does. Certainly, the league's attorney Jeff Pasch laid out some points as far as saying, you know, the sham theory that the players' union decertifying and going to association is a quote unquote sham, and they laid some key points out for saying why that is based on some, I guess, historical law cases that have happened in the past. The union counters with their own kind of say, hey, this is why we believe we are right and that we have the ability to decertify. You know, and you're right. I mean, you're at the point now where you're just like, I don't want to hear what you think about what they think about what they think and what you think about what they think, et cetera, both sides of the side.
Any PR being done right now is
getting old.
It's not going to do any good with the fans. And, you know, I gauge a lot by the readers that email me. And the ones that are basically saying, I don't really have a side. I don't care. Please tell them we don't care.
No, you know, because you know where their side is? It's football.
Right.
Football. Right. I mean, that's where the side is. And certainly this week, some rules changes happened.
The fans do care about that.
Yeah.
And they should.
Were some of the opinions strong one way or the other about some of these rules changes?
Yeah, and it's they're very much against the rule to move the kickoffs back up because they feel like that's taking the special teams.
This is a team that's got two of the Pro Bowl special teams players, and Montel and Simma's good and has what, you know, hopefully will be a dynamite return man in Deji Karim. I mean, heck, you want to have, you know, that part be, you know, a factor in the ball game, and by moving the kickoff back to the, 35, it takes it out.
Right. I'm curious, I wrote today for tomorrow, how much that's really going to impact the game. I wonder, I'll be anxious to see the first 4 or 5 weeks of the season if there's a drastic increase in touchbacks or not.
Well, it's got to.
I sort of get the idea that over
time. You know why it's got to? Because you know what? You look at all the big-time kickers in the league, and obviously the guy in Arizona is number one in touchbacks.
Right.
His name escapes me. Neil Rackers.
Right.
Neil is the king of touchback. But you look at every other kicker in the National Football League, and most of them are right around the 2-3 yard line. Well, you give them 4-5 more yards.
Yeah.
You know, and it's going to change the percentage, and I think it's going to change the percentage of touchbacks probably close to 30%.
I think probably what you'll see, and I also wrote this, I don't know if this is a permanent rule change in the sense of you're going to see this rule still in place 2-3 years down the road. There's something about this owner's meetings, this set of competition committee recommendations that feels very reactionary to me. And I don't know that you're going to see all these rules hold for very long. For the short term, you might. They're really wanting to make some sort of statement of, hey, we're addressing the player safety issue.
Yeah,
I don't know that they're going to last forever.
But you know what? There's other ways to do that.
I think you may see him fool with this for a while.
Well, and when we come back, I'm going to talk about ways that they could make what they say is the most dangerous play in football, and that's kickoff coverage, kickoff return.
Right.
How to make it safer, and it's something that I don't know if the head coach alluded it to you or not.
With the wedge.
About the wedge.
Right. And I was really struck that they didn't make that change. And I agree with what I think you're going to say.
All right, we'll explain that when we come back. Folks, if you want to get in the number, 355-6351. That's 1-800-355-6351. Also, if you're outside the calling area, It is Jaguars This Week with me, Jeff Loggeman, and the senior editor of Jaguars.com, the Ozone Man, Mr. John Osher. Fans, nobody helps you get ready for game day or the weekend or March Madness better than Gate. Snacks, food, drinks, and more. Stop by your Gate today. Jeff Loggeman here with John Osher, Jaguars.com. We're talking about NFL rules changes. And they are moving the kickoffs from, well, and I guess you could say moving it back from the 30 where it was moved to, I guess, what year was that?
30 was in the, I want to say it was 93 or 94.
They moved it back because they wanted to make the game higher scoring.
Right. At one point in the 70s, it was at the 40.
Yeah.
But, you know, and I know you're going to mention this as well. Somebody said today in an email to me, well, don't they remember that these kickoffs were from the 40 and 35 mm-hmm. at one point? Kickers, like everybody else, have gotten better since then. And
bigger, stronger, faster. Kickers are no exception.
The trend has always been, as you said, to move them further back to keep the kickoff return part of the game. That's mm-hmm. always been the issue. Mm-hmm. Now, as you're about to say, it's becoming exactly the opposite.
I mean, to me, you move it to 35, and then we're going to end up with, you know, probably 70-75% touchbacks, probably. And they were talking about, well, if we move it up, then if it's a touchback, then we would move the touchback to the 25 point where they would get the ball out of the 25. They decided against that. It's going to stay at the 20. But they're talking about how to make the game safer, and they keep pointing to this statistic. And I don't know where it comes from. I'm not questioning the validity of it. I just don't know the source of it. And that's the number one play for injury in all of professional football. Well, I mean, Montel Owens talked this week, I believe, in an interview article about how, you know, he had some concussion issues back when you had the four-man wedge. Well, now you're not allowed to have a four-man wedge. You can have two-man wedges. What's the difference?
Right.
I mean, to me, just eliminate having the wedges all together, because if you have a wedge, that means you have wedge busters.
Right.
If you don't have a wedge, then you don't have wedge busters and you don't have those collisions.
Couldn't you also, I think part of the rule is that you can't line up more than 5 yards off the ball.
Yeah, and to me, that's not going to help anything. Because, I mean, think about it, John. How fast does it take an NFL player to get to full speed?
Well, I'm thinking, why don't you move it up to where you have to line up on the ball but as a first resort?
You're still going to have guys at full speed. I mean, to me, that's not going to change the speed of the play.
Right.
To me, I mean, just eliminate the wedges, because those are the right. ones where you got a guy going 100 miles an hour coming down the field on a kickoff coverage team, and he's probably an L5 or an R5. If you don't know what that is, folks, R means right side. He's the fifth guy from the sideline, right. And L is left on the left side, fifth guy in. And they're running 100 miles an hour, and you get two offensive linemen, offensive or defensive linemen, which are the guys that are the wedge, and they're kind of the guy, the group of guys right in front of the ball carrier. They join hands and try to basically be a bulldozer. Mm-hmm. And so you got two 300-pound men plus meeting a guy who's running full speed. And whether he starts at the 30 or the 15 and gets a running start, he's going to be full speed by the time he meets the wedge, typically right around the 20 to 15-yard line. It's physics. If you don't have a wedge and you require mano a mano, I guess you could say, one guy to block one guy, you don't have those violent collisions. Right. You typically have angle blocks more so than you do the frontal collisions. To me, that was a very simple thing to do,
right?
Instead of just eliminating it altogether. And I don't understand, you know, moving the kickoff, but then still keeping two-man wedges. And because, you know, the rule is that you have to be a couple yards apart. And so, in other words, you can have four guys that are wedge guys, but they have to be two and two, and they have to be a few yards apart, so they all four can't hold hands. If they get within a couple yards of each other, the two groups, it becomes an illegal wedge.
Right.
Does it really make that big of a difference being a couple yards apart? No.
Right.
To me, that was just a mistake. And you take out a part of the game, to me, that I think is super exciting in football, because if you have a game, last second, team's got a kickoff, there's always a chance.
Sure.
You know, there's always a chance, and people hold their breath. And now, I mean, can you really hold your breath? I mean, how many 80-yard Hail Marys have you seen?
Right.
You know, versus how many kick returns for touchdowns have you seen? You've seen them.
Well, the team that I covered last year, the Colts, you know, as a lot of listeners know, they probably win their first round playoff game if this rule is in place.
Because
they're up, I forget what it was, 16-14 with about a minute and a half left. And Antonio Cromartie returned to kick 40, 45 yards, put the Jets in field goal range. If this rule is in place, the odds of a touchback, you know, will go up significantly, and the odds of stopping that team might go up significantly. So it's definitely going to change the game. And
will it change the pay rate? You know, does a special teams player like a Montel or a Kasim Osgood or a Devin Hester, whoever, or Antonio Cromartie,
sure.
I mean, whoever. I mean, to name all the big return guys, does their value go down?
In the long run, in the short term, I'm not sure as much as people think. In the long run, yeah.
I think it could.
If it statistically shows that this is changing the game like we all kind of think it's going to.
I mean, they're going to possibly touch the ball maybe half of what they did before.
Right.
You know, so, I mean, if you got half the touches, half the danger, half the opportunity to contribute big plays, and so, you know.
Does it change how people approach the kicker position, too? Is it quite, you know, because
I think people are going to be less apt to require a kickoff specialist.
Or perhaps more apt to have one if they know that guy is going to be an ace.
Well, I mean, most guys can get a touchback.
Yeah. You know,
very few can't.
Again, the team, it could change the dynamic of that aging kicker who's around for accuracy.
Mm-hmm.
Do you keep him? Is that viewed a little differently? I mean,
he better be super accurate.
Yeah. I know Vinatieri in Indianapolis, probably even with this 35-year-old, you know, the 35-yard rule, will still have trouble getting.
He would, really.
Yeah. I mean, he would get into the end zone. I'm not sure he can get it 7 yards deep. He can some, but not as consistent. And
I wonder,
it'll change that a little bit.
Will they? You know, typically, you know, the return guy will say, "I'm not going to bring it out if I'm 5 yards deep."
Maybe he changes it. Yeah.
Will that change? Will he start coming out?
Right.
If he's 5 yards deep.
Right. I just have a feeling this may be one that they look at 5-6 games into the season. Maybe it's changed things too much.
Yeah. To me, why change the game? I mean, it's been more exciting than ever.
Right.
The other rule change that stuck is that all scoring plays now become reviewable, and I believe in the booth.
Yes.
So the guy upstairs will, and I'm not exactly sure. Maybe you can explain this to me. When they say that a scoring play will be reviewed from the booth, does the guy upstairs have the ability to change the play? Or does he have the ability to ring down to the referee and say, "Hey, we need to take a look at this play"?
That I don't know. And I should, but I don't.
I think that's an interesting question.
Also, have you heard, I believe, if it's not ruled a touchdown, let's say somebody is down at the half-yard line, ruled down at the half-yard line, and he really got in. If it isn't originally ruled a touchdown, they can't review it.
No.
Right.
Well, I mean, it can be challenged from the coach. So, I mean, it's not reviewable from the official standpoint.
I was very interested when I talked to Jack last week, Jack Del Rio. I was very interested to hear him tell me that.
He's got some nice thoughts on that.
He's really in favor of everything being reviewed in the booth. In the booth, a la the college system.
Mm-hmm.
And, again, I'll reference a team I covered. Bill Polian has always said for the 10 years that I covered that team, a big thing that the competition committee and the league in general was really fearful of when they first brought back replay was extending the game, was having the game be too long. And that's why everything wasn't
But, John, I mean, think about it this way. If the game's extended, that's just more opportunities for commercials.
True. I mean, that's true.
What's wrong with that?
That was the league thing for a long time, though, that when they first tried to bring back You know, the instant replay.
They wanted to keep the pace going.
They did not want that slow game that you experienced in maybe the early to mid-90s where it was just going on too long, too many delays. So it's an interesting dynamic. And Jack knows he's sort of in the minority, but he also thinks that the technology being developed right now may put him back in the majority
on
that front.
We come back, I want to explain, because I also had the same conversation with him about some of the reasons why he would like to keep it up in the booth, and he makes some good points.
Very good.
Folks, when you're looking for department store style at discount prices, look no further than your neighborhood Stein Mart. 6 Jacksonville locations, Stein Mart. More fashion, less price, and I need certainly more fashion. People go, why is Batman music playing? Well, if you heard there in the news, there's somebody that was driving a car that resembles that of Batman's on top of the Dames Point Bridge and got out with a lawn chair. Is that right? A lawn chair. And I guess just decided to take in the view.
It's a good view up on that bridge.
Yeah, it is.
Heck of a view, but strange stories. All right, talking about the head coach's comments on why he would like to see replay stay in the booth. And he made a good point to me when I had a chance to sit down with him for an interview with Jaguars.com. And he said, hey, look, you know, if you look at what the referee is looking at on the sidelines, first of all, it takes the time for him to get off the field to get to the actual replay monitor on the sidelines, stick his head, you know, under the cape. You like that? Another Batman reference. And he's looking at a monitor that's probably about the size of this computer screen in front of me, not very big.
Right.
He said, well, you know, the guy in the booth has got, you know, these beautiful high-def monitors that, you know, probably 45 inches plus. Wouldn't he be able to see it better in a monitor such as that as opposed to a small monitor on the field? And I agree with that. And I think that you know what, the NFL for has many officials that, you know, eventually kind of work into that retirement mm-hmm. stage, and it would be a great opportunity to keep that experience in the game and put it in a booth. Why not?
Right.
I mean, heck, Mike Prayer could still be working for the NFL as a referee, but he could be doing it in a booth.
Right.
You know, even the guy, what was the guy who used to do, Red Cashin, first down. Red Cashin could still be in the booth. I agree with that.
Yeah, I mean, and Jack also made the point, you know, they're dealing with elements. They're walking over there in the cold. They perhaps are trying to justify their own call or are trying to justify a friend of theirs' call
mm-hmm.
that was made on the field. You know, the only thing I am concerned about, I do like the pace of the game. I do think that there is an element of having too much reviewed from the booth where all of a sudden it just seems weird. All of a sudden they're stopping play. And I can recall in the early 90s.
Yeah, but they don't have, in college they don't stop the play all the time, do they?
Right. No, they do not.
I mean, to me it seems like in college it's been pretty seamless.
It's been pretty seamless, and I think over time you're going to see them go to that.
I would be
surprised if they don't.
I think they should.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, because to me, what's the most important thing? Getting it right.
Right. This league can be slow to change on those fronts, though.
Yeah.
Although they weren't slow to change on the special teams rule.
Well, I don't know. I don't know. The draft coming up. Have we entered the smoke screen phase yet?
You can make the argument that that may have started with John Elway's comments this week when he was talking about taking a quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think the smoke screen stage.
But you know what? Is that really a smoke screen? Because if it is a smoke screen, would you want to go ahead and maybe put that out there to let people maybe question Tim Tebow? If you believe that he's the quarterback, or Kyle Orton, would you want to put that out there as a smoke screen and maybe risk damage in the quarterback meeting room?
It's hard to tell. You know, and I think while you like John's honesty, because he seems to have been very forthcoming and very honest, you wonder if he hasn't said some things so far that he won't say in the future
mm-hmm.
on that front. And, you know, I kind of, because there's so much smoke screening before the draft, I read so many things with a grain of salt this time of year that while I pay attention to it, I don't I don't put a whole lot of stock in what people say right now, publicly anyway.
In your opinion, because I'm not a draft expert by any stretch of the imagination.
Right.
In fact, I had a question online chat, jaguars.com. Well, I don't remember if it was last week or 2 weeks ago, but recently. And one of the questions was, you know, who do you think that the Jaguars should draft? And my response is, I don't have right. enough time to call it to follow college football. And I have two questions for you. One is, do you have or are you getting any feelers for maybe of a couple guys that the Jaguars like? That Gene Smith and Terry say, hey, look, you know, really, you get that feel about them. And number two, for the fans that are out there that may want to become fans of the draft and follow the draft because we're not following anything else in the NFL free agency-wise or anything else right now, what publications, what websites have legitimate, good information on draft?
I've always liked, you know, the best free one that I know about, I believe it's called NFL Draft Scout, I believe is the name of it. I'm not trying to plug it. I have no interest in it. But they do a pretty good job, and I believe they have a pay section to it. I'm not sure about that. And then there's one that's free called Walter Football that I often find myself checking because they seem to do a pretty good job, and I don't think there's any pay to it. I usually use the sites, frankly, to just sort of get caught up.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really what I spend most of March and April doing, is kind of getting caught up. I read the rumors same as everybody else. In answer to your question, I don't really have a good feel because, you know, the Jaguars do the best available player. And when you do that, the draft board kind of falls to you. And I think that's the way they approach things. They have a list. I'm sure they have guys that they would like. The fans talk a lot about Ryan Kerrigan from Purdue. He's a mm-hmm. defensive end.
Mm-hmm.
They talk about the J.J. Watt from Wisconsin, who's a defensive end.
And the other name that I saw mentioned somewhere was the guy from Iowa.
Right.
I don't
know. I'm drawing a blank me. Like you. Yeah. I mean, I've written it a million times. I'm drawing a blank. I used to think about
– But it's kind of interesting that, you know, the three names that, as you just mentioned –
Right.
Defensive end.
Well, and I think fans are correctly deducing that after a couple of years, Gene considers that a core position. He considers that a position that they have to be good at and, you know, if not great at.
And it's a premium position.
And historically, that's a spot where you can get a defensive end who can play a little bit. You know, a defensive tackle, I like to get defensive tackles in the top 10. I think they're harder to get, that premium guy. But a defensive end, cornerback, wide receiver, I think 15 is a little too high for wide receiver or 16. But a defensive end and corner, 16 is a spot where, you know, you can get guys who can play a little bit.
To me, you don't take a receiver in the first round ever. Unless
I don't mind him at the end of the first round.
Unless it's just a lights out guy.
I don't mind him at the end of the first round, mid the first round. I think you're right. I think it's too high.
If you went in the league right now and said, okay, which wide receiver is worth a first round pick? Can you give me five names? I'm talking top 10.
Oh, top 10. No. No, I cannot. Not in the top 10. Fitzgerald and.
Fitzgerald, yeah, he'd be one of them.
He'd be one, and. Yeah, not really. I mean,
it's not easy.
Not top 10. I think end of the first round, probably because of my experience covering the Colts, they got Reggie Wayne in 31 or 29. I think 25 on down, you can get pretty good value wide receiver. Akeem Nicks comes to mind, the Giants mm-hmm. guy. I like it at that spot. That's a position that a team that's contending can pick up a good player late in the first round. Tight end, I think you can do that with. But you're right, top 15 – running back and wide receiver, I would almost never use that.
It's got to be, to me, top picks got to be the big guys.
I agree.
Both sides of the ball, quarterback, cornerbacks.
Right. That's about it.
And maybe a you know, pass rushing type linebacker, especially, certainly if you're running a 3-4.
If you run 3-4, If not, I would never take linebacker in the first round.
All right, we'll take a phone call here. Let's go talk to Leo, calling us from the beach, got a draft question. Good evening, Leo.
Hey, how you doing, Jeff?
Doing good.
And, John, first of all, y'all forgot about Andre Johnson. He's a top 10 receiver.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he is.
Him. Absolutely, you're right. Yeah. I did forget about Andre Johnson.
Now, Leo, anybody else that you would make a top 10 pick in the league right now? Andre Johnson, and as we've mentioned, Larry Fitzgerald.
No, not this time. You can say Rodney White is probably top 15, but not top 10. No. Not this time. But my question to you is, well, it's not my question. I think the Jaguars at the number 16 pick is going to get Christian Ponder. No doubt about it.
I don't, you know, everything that I'm hearing is that's high.
No, but the thing is, Christian Ponder sets his Senior Bowl, his Pro Day, and his scout combine, he rising up the boards. And I think Gene Smith always said, even on your radio show, that he wanted a quarterback that could become a starter one day. Mm-hmm. And I think because of Colin Kirkpatrick and Christian Ponder and Andy Dalton, I think they all rising up to the end of the first round, beginning of the second round. I think if the Jaguars don't draft a quarterback in the first round, they're not going to get one at all.
Oh, I don't know about that, Leo.
Because
Leo,
the bike won't be there.
Leo, thanks for the call. I don't know about that you know, my interview with the new quarterbacks coach of the Jaguars, he talked about how strong that the quarterback crop will be, particularly in the mid-rounds. All right, we need a break. Folks, test drive the new 2011 Ford Super Duty, the new 2011 Ford Mustang, or the all-new Ford Fiesta, only at your local Southern Ford dealer's. Number to get in, 904-355-6351, inside of Jacksonville, and outside 1-800-355-6351. Jeff Loggeman here with John Osher, and you're listening to Jaguars This Week right here on News Talk Radio WOKV. Bueller Swiss Watch Company is proud to be the official watch of the Jacksonville Jaguars. Bueller Swiss watches are available at Allen's, Robinson Jeweler, Faceted Rainbow in Ocala, Kingsley Jewelry in Orange Park, and Lords and Baron in Tallahassee. That was terrible, Reed, wasn't it? That was terrible. Thank you. I usually don't do that. I'm Jeff Loggeman, sitting in for, I guess you could say, sitting in Brian Sexton's seat, because John Osher is across the table from me in my seat. The number to get in, 355-6351. You can also dial the 1-800 version of that, 800-355-6351. Yes, Joe? Oh, you want the clip. There you go. Last segment here, your draft, mock draft.
Reader mock draft.
Yeah. I've been following it.
Okay.
Your last pick was the wide receiver from Georgia, right?
A.J. Green.
And where did the fans have him going? What pick was that? Number six. Yeah, six.
And it's been good. It's been interesting to me that, there's a pretty high level of draftnik on the Jaguars.com readers. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of debate. And I always find, when I did this for my blog for 2 years, I learn a lot from listening and, while reading what the fans have to say.
Now, who's the guy that's fallen, the defensive tackle from Alabama?
From Auburn, Nick Fairley.
Yeah.
And,
wasn't he the one who was supposed to be the higher pick of the two?
And he may well wind up being. I think what's interesting when you follow a mock draft like we're doing is not necessarily the specific guy, but the fact that there's going to be a musical chairs guy in this draft somewhere. Somebody's going to fall much lower than some people have him projected. All of these guys, somebody's got him in the top three or four. Well, somebody like a Robert Quinn, a Nick Fairley, a Cam Newton, somebody's going to fall and be available at 11 or 12 that is going to surprise a lot of people. And, somebody down in that 10 or 11 or 12 spot has a chance to get a guy that nobody really thought they were going to be able to get.
And so far, there's not an offensive lineman, is there?
No, there's not.
I mean, which to me, wait a minute now.
I think with this bunch, there's really not a left tackle who's crying out there to be taken.
Well, who's the highest rated left tackle? Isn't it the guy from Boston College?
And the guy from USC.
USC?
Smith from USC, and there's a tackle from Boston College, again, whose name is escaping me because they haven't been mentioned in my draft yet. But those two guys are kind of the guys out. But I really haven't seen a whole lot of people talking about those guys in the top 10. The The two cornerbacks are both intriguing to me. Akumakara from Nebraska. I know,
yeah.
I'm botching his name.
Yep.
Both of those guys are getting a lot of mention in the top 10. That would be unusual to me to have two corners go in the top 10. I'm sort of like my predecessor and like you. I like the big linemen,
yeah,
in the top 10.
Yeah, corner is a premium position nowadays.
But you can't rush the passer. You've got to be able to rush the passer to make the corner matter.
Okay, earlier, and I wanted to follow up with this because you didn't throw anything out there. I asked you about draft publications and or websites, and you mentioned websites.
Mm-hmm.
The draft publication, to me, the one that I believe it's Pro Football Weekly puts out, mm-hmm. is that the book form?
Yes.
Draft Guide, I think, is outstanding. Is there any other ones that are good?
That's
because
the one that
they rank them, you know, from every positions, and then they do.
Yeah, that one's
overall.
Not what it was. I mean, when Joel Buschbaum did it until his death, I think it was about 5 or 6 years ago now, it was off the charts the best when he was doing it.
Yeah.
He was the best probably who'll ever do it. It's still sort of considered the Bible, maybe not as much as it was when he was living.
Why was it so good with Joel? Is it just that he had the contacts?
He was
the
guy. He was a guy who lived, breathed the draft.
That was his.
Scouts trusted him. I mean, it was – he had it. He was not about ego. You never saw him on TV. He was about that publication. Now I think, you know, Kuiper, anybody else doing it on TV is not quite what Buschbaum was, because they're more about the TV and they're more about the appearances than they are about –
I don't like Kuiper.
Researching the guys. I think those guys do a good job.
The reason I say that is he took shots at me. I don't want to say shots at me. Shots at when I was at me, the pick.
Me, well.
Back in 89.
He wasn't the only one, was he?
No, well, of course, you know, it was me, and then it was Polian in Indianapolis, wasn't it? Who's?
Tobin in Indianapolis.
Yeah,
he took shots
Tobin.
At them for not taking Trent Dilfer over, I guess the Colts took Trev Alberts, I believe,
right.
That was the pick.
Right.
And that was pretty legendary when Tobin came out and said, who the heck is Mel Kiper Jr.
Yeah.
Anyway?
Yeah,
I mean,
working out of his basement.
That's legendary
in
Indy.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I don't know exactly which publication that I read the most, but I can guarantee you that the one that sits on my coffee table when it gets close to the draft, because they don't put it out until pretty close to the draft.
Right.
But that little book.
Yeah, they do a great
That's
job.
That's it. I read it thoroughly. Thank you, Joe.
Thank you, Jeff. Thank you, John.
And thank you, John.
Anytime. Anytime. I hope it didn't bore the listener.
Senior editor of Jaguars.com, John Ozone Osher. How about that?
Huh?
We'll talk to everybody
All
next
right.
week. See you.